You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, we go retro. Well, a retro magazine. Not that magazines are retro, they are. Just the name of the magazine is retro. We have guests. And they stay for Pile of Shame and Future Retro. Just listen.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, man.
Just a minute. I'm reading through a physical game magazine. I don't know if you've heard of those. It's something we have in Japan. I'm reading Famitsu right now. Later, I might read a little bit of Nintendo Life, something like that.
What?
Yes, yes. Japan has this amazing process where they've taken basically information, text from the web, and they've put it on like these mashed trees. I don't know if you've heard of this process, but they call it a magazine. They call it a magazine.
Yes, I've heard of magazines. I think we got interviewed for one once.
Oh yes,
I'm holding it right here. Yeah, okay. We're in the same issue with John Romero. I'm feeling pretty excited about this.
That's wonderful.
Famicom Disk System games. Oh, there's like Back to the Future article in here too. Yeah,
I'm surprised they had enough room for both us and John Romero's hair.
Well, you know, I miss this, you know. I used to have a Nintendo Power subscription, you know, back in the day.
I had starting at the Nintendo, what is it, Nintendo Fan Club Newsletter? What was it called? Before it actually became Nintendo Power.
Oh, right on. No, I came on like issue 21 or 22, whichever one had like Metal Storm on the cover.
I mean... Whatever happened to print? I wish there was somebody who could tell us more.
Mike, that's you.
I wish.
Oh,
there was somebody.
Is that my cue? I was just enjoying the story and the role play in there. I mean, it was really great.
You make it sound like this is all fixed or planned ahead
of
time.
No. It was totally not fixed. I was just waiting. Waiting for the. You know, the hint to come on and the little whisper there was great. My name's Mike Kennedy and I'm publisher of Retro Magazine. It's a new magazine that actually, we print things on paper and we deliver these magazines to your house through what's called the mail.
And is that with drones?
One day maybe it will be.
Should be a stretch goal.
No, I think there's still people yeah. that actually walk up to your house and open the lid, you know, and they slide the magazine in, and then they shut it. Wow. And then it's there for you whenever
That's
you're ready
weird.
To come and get it.
That's
amazing
so
what they can do these days.
This is so strange, too. We were, like, just talking about magazines. I don't know how you just knew to be here, but thanks for coming.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. We brought Mark Kaminsky around. He's our co-founder and creative director as well, responsible for what we print on these pages and for pretty much anything to do with how it looks and feels and tastes and everything.
Tastes, you say?
Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us on.
For one thing, it's very cool that you have a new magazine called Retro, a little bit of an oxymoron in itself.
Well, you know, eventually everything's going to be retro, so I think it's okay.
I guess why do you think that a magazine can make it these days when they've just been dying left and right?
Well, I mean, when we launched our first Kickstarter a year ago, we didn't know. You know, we kind of Mark contacted me, and he's kind of comes from the business. You know, the marketing, the magazine business, and PR, and he had a lot of contacts and the ability to lay this magazine out. So when he came to me and said, let's do a print magazine. At first, you'd think, well, that's crazy, you know. But when somebody comes that has the ability to actually, you know, help with a major part of that process, you know, you're like, yeah, why not? You know, let's figure this thing out. And so Kickstarter was a great opportunity to kind of see if other people, you know, think the same way that we do, that, you know, it'd be really cool to have another, print magazine get born. So far, it's really worked out well. The first year Kickstarter, which we did exactly 1 year ago in October of 2013, it was successful. We kind of blew by, I think we hit like 150% of goal, and we've been selling somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 200 magazines a month ever since. So, I mean, it's continued to grow, you know, even above the Kickstarter that we did last year. And, we got a kind of an all-star cast of, contributors, writers, and illustrators that help us, create this really great magazine for people. And, it's just been a really great team. It's been a great experience. It's been a lot of work. Generally people, really are liking the print. We're also available in digital. But most people, seem to gravitate to the print subscription.
Well, part of the inspiration for me, at least, was, being in the magazine space professionally. Garden and Gun magazine came out like late 2007, 2008, like niche product. They pulled out all the stops, wanted to put something out there for the fans. Really high quality magazine, a lot of evergreen content, solid paper, like collectible magazine. And we just kind of felt like there's a need for something like that. So we're putting out something with great writers, great content, like high quality that you could put on a shelf, be proud that you have it, not something you take in the toilet, throw it out. It's not like all current news and stuff, So there's a reason to kind of collect and hold on to them.
Well, that's cool. Can you guys tell us a little bit about the team you've assembled?
Yeah, I mean, we tried to go out and kind of handpick some for me. I mean, some of the people that I had read growing up, although there's not that many of them around anymore, but one in particular, Andy Eddy, who is a person I've been reading, his words, since the mid, late 80s and early 90s, I mean, he's been around a long time. And, so he writes a column for us. We kind of went back and mined some of the the internet generation people, Jeremy Parrish and Sean Baby and Chris Kohler, Cap Bailey, people like this, and kind of, brought them in. And of course, they've all written for much bigger sites and all have, full-time jobs in the industry, but they really enjoy having an opportunity to kind of do and not just talk about the current stuff all the time, but to talk about stuff that they really love and are passionate about. And we kind of give them a platform to do that. And we hope to be adding to that list, into year two. We're bringing Scott Sharkey on board, who a lot of people will remember from the early 1UP days and kind of early IGN days. And there's a few other folks that we hope to be adding over the course of the next 3 weeks during the Kickstarter, and maybe reveal some more of them on the Kickstarter campaign page as we add them.
Well, there was a guy I used to read way back in the Four Color Rebellion days. Maybe you've heard of him. I think his name's Vink.
Oh, yeah.
Vink is in the magazine. So, will continue to be, maybe even at a little higher level as things go on. So,
yeah, that'd be awesome.
We're excited to have him. Yeah. That's the other thing. I mean, we got other folks in there that, maybe aren't on the big sites or whatever, but I mean, they're great writers and getting an opportunity to get their name in print, which just doesn't happen much these days, especially in gaming. It's kind of a limited opportunity, for people to do that. So when you can talk with people and give them an opportunity to participate and, preserve what they want to say on paper, I think in a high quality magazine that people do want to keep and collect and have for years and years and years, it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, I've been writing for gaming websites for nearly 10 years now, different sites, Four Color Rebellion, contributing to other sites, but this is the first time I've had a byline in an actual print magazine, and I don't know why, but that was the one that I wanted to show people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm going to send a copy to my parents the first time, because I don't know, there's something about that, because I remember reading magazines as a kid and just idolizing these people who were in these magazines. There's something about that physical property, the feel of turning pages, things like that just makes it that much more special.
That's right.
Well, I mean, for me, I actually got to meet and interview George R. R. Martin in May. It was so cool. And honestly, I'd watched the shows and stuff. I'd never read any of his books. I feel like a total idiot. And then after meeting him, I'm like, ah, I have to read. So I started reading the books, and I read 5,000 pages. And
I was going to say, I hope you have a lot of free time.
No, and I mean, packed it in with designing the magazine and everything. You know, like, family went to the beach for the, you know, the summer, and we went out there, and just, like, I bought the books and was out there on the beach reading the book and everything. Everywhere I went, like, taking the book, and it was just, like, so liberating having a physical media to, like, take with you, you know, not have to plug something in. Charge it, worry about sunlight or heat or something, you know, like, there's something tangible, like you said, having your name in print. Like, I mean, it's very satisfying. So, I mean, we hope that people, you know, we feel that there's people that still enjoy that. So
For me, it's the same with, I mean, we're entering a digital revolution right now, download only titles coming out and things like that. But whenever possible, I still try to pick up the physical medium. I don't know. There's just something that I don't think will ever be taken away. Maybe I'm just too old to understand all these newfangled things, but I don't know. But still, for those who do like the all digital stuff, since I'm a collector as well, I've probably been reading the magazines just as much on my iPad, so I don't get them wrinkled.
Oh. What a tangled web we weave here. Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of people that do that. We offer the PDF version with the print subscription, and I had just at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo this last week, and I had a lot of people say that, you know, thanks for, you know, providing us with the PDF version as well, because a lot of them are reading the PDF version and keeping the magazines, you know, sealed in the poly bags, you know, at least like the first season, you know, or the first year. You know, how cool would it be to have, you know, like a first year set of Nintendo Powers that were never opened?
I know.
This is dangerous, right? This is like hitting on my collector buttons right now. Well, I can have my cake and eat it too. Yes, please.
Last week on our Facebook, actually, somebody had an auction for issue one, which sold out almost immediately. You know, like, we're not reprinting it. We get requests for it all the time. So somebody had an eBay auction. We were happy. We posted it up on the Facebook, you know, like, people are asking for it all the time, like, hey, here's your chance, like, go get it, you know, some guy's selling it. And our readers actually figured out, they're like, well, that doesn't have the sticker in the bag, so that technically isn't one of the Kickstarter ones, it's one of the ones you guys sold afterwards. And it was, like, crazy, like, I'm the guy, you know, that put it together, you know, we put it together, and I'm like, I didn't even think of that, you know. And so it's a number one, but it's not like a, you know, first polybag number one from the print plant, and like, there's a whole different, like, wow, grading system that people it's crazy. So
what? Sean, that's what we should have done with our DVDs. We should have had multiple prints with different stuff, then people would collect them more. Oh, that means, yeah. Hey, that means I've got a CIB retro number one. I should hold on to that. So that eBay auction went for what, like $50 or something?
57 plus 10 shipping.
For something that is, what, at this point, what, 10 months old?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
If somebody would have told me that, you know, I'd say, like, you know, before it went out, I'd, you know, like, this is going to happen, so you're smoking crack, you're crazy, you know, like.
People have offered up to $150 for theirs, though. A couple of people have told me they've had offers up to $150 for it.
And we were at CGE this year, and we did a bundled set of, like, issue 1 through 4 for charity auction for the Video Game History Museum, and it got bid up to $250.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's cool. It's for charity, you know, but, like, you know, so who knows? Maybe they're, you know, they're bidding up for charity reasons or whatever, but I wouldn't know. You know, we had no reserve, like, dollar bid increments, and it went all the way up, and there was a lot of, you know, there was like, what, Mike, like 15 people bidding on it. It was crazy.
Yeah, just to get the first issue, essentially, because we had the other issues there at the show all weekend for $3 each. So, and there was $9 worth of issues there, plus the premiere. Yeah, so.
But, I mean, I think there's a high probability that, you know, just the idea that it's you know, a print magazine right now, I think any issue is going to kind of go up in price. So Famicom Dojo listeners, you'd be losing money not supporting this Kickstarter.
Is that possible? Oh no.
So I mean, yeah, you probably want to get in on that. Buy a subscription for yourself and one for your vault.
That's right. No. It the Portland Retro Show, I had a couple little kids. They were probably 10, 12 years old, stopped by our booth, and I was talking to some other people there that were looking for, right at the same time, looking for issue one. I was like, you know, issue one is sold out, because we got asked at the show just this past weekend a bunch of times. And I said, you know, two and three are going to follow suit here pretty soon. I mean, because we're running really low on our second and third issue. And so these little kids, I was selling them there for $3, you know. And so I had these little kids, they bought two each. You know, they bought one and then one to sell down the road. And I thought it was so cute. Yeah, you know, and it was like, they got to figure it out, you know. So I thought that was really hilarious.
They were 10 and 12 years old, and they were looking at print magazines. Did any of them say, you have to use your hands? That's like a baby's toy.
You know what? It was so cool, because I was there all weekend, and I brought about 300 magazines with me, and I just had the table, you know, full of three of our issues, two, three, and four. But like I said, one was gone, and there were so many times where, you know, like two or three people would come up, pull up a magazine, and just stand there with one magazine between the three of them, and just point and laugh and talk about what we were talking about, and showing the magazine, you know, holding it over here so his friend could see it, or holding it over here. And I was just like, that moment right there, I'm like, that's what it's all about, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you don't see somebody reading an iPad and saying, here, look at this. I mean, it was a magazine, and there was like three heads, all, you know, two looking over this guy's shoulder, you know, looking and seeing what, you know, our top 20 platformers were, and then laughing about it, you know, our picks, or I can't believe they picked this, and, you know, stuff like that. So it was, I mean, that's really what it's all about for me personally. I mean, just seeing that enjoyment and that instant enjoyment, and then, you know, people joking like, hey, this is a magazine, because it happened all weekend.
Well,
you know, people really appreciated it.
I have a little anecdote. Like a couple weeks ago, I went into one of our local stores. You know, we're in like, how many, Mike? Like
90 locations, yeah.
Locations now, you know, a lot of like mom and pop sort of local video game shops, stuff like that. So I went into one of my local retailers that's carrying us, and I brought in some posters just so they can hang up and want to check on the magazine. And they're like, we already sold out, you know, issue four and everything. And there was a young kid in there, and he was like, oh, it sounds cool. Like, you know, what is it? And I'm like telling him about it. And he's like, oh, I'd like to buy some. And I didn't want to tell the store like, oh, well, you can just go, you know, subscribe on. And so I'm like, well, you know what? I have one in the car. Let me go get it. And I gave it to him, and his dad was there, and he was so thankful and like, oh, thanks. You know, I'm like, yeah, just check it out, and, you know, maybe next month come back in this store and buy one. And then I felt bad walking out afterwards. I'm like, oh, we like reviewed Snatcher. We did a retrospective on Snatcher, and there's like picture of like naked robot in there, you know.
That's the kind of magazine that two or three people gather around to look at, so that's okay.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh man, that's great. That's the whole thing about it. Just I think for people you know, of our generation, that there's just the memories there. I used to bring my copies of Video and Computer Entertainment magazine down with me to the lunchroom, and yeah, we used to gather around those and see what was new and what to get. I don't know, what magazines did you guys read when you were young?
Oh, gosh. I mean, for me, you know, the first magazine sort of dedicated to the whole medium, electronic games. You know, I mean, you know, that magazine, well, my God, I mean, you would read that front to back cover, I mean, back and forth 100 times, you know, I mean, it was amazing. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, Video Games and Computer Entertainment, Andy Eddy's magazine in the 90s. And then, of course, you know, Grain Pro and EGM back in its heyday when magazines were like, you know, 150, 200 pages thick. I mean, you remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was great, you know, so
half
all of
ads,
those.
But
yeah, but I mean, you know, right now, I mean, those are that's half the fun of reading old magazines is the ads. I honestly have more fun reading those.
I got to say, yeah. That's one of the first things I read when I get a new retro magazine is I crack it open and I see who's advertising in it, because the type of advertisers who advertise in retro magazine usually are selling something that I want to buy.
Yeah. Yeah, that we try to keep it real relevant, you know. And we just said Nintendo, you know, they're kind of the first really big, you know, kind of first party, you know, company to come in. So we're really excited about that. They bought a 2-page spread in our next in our fifth issue. So I'm really excited to see that. Mark, if, just speaking of that, any art come from Nintendo yet, or are we still waiting?
No, yeah, we got it.
Oh, we did. Oh, okay.
Excellent.
Cool.
That's cool. I mean, for us, it helps legitimize what we're doing. Just, you know, it's not about the money. It's the fact that they believe in what we're doing. They feel that it's important to their, you know, demographic to support us, and, you know, it's really cool. Going back to what magazines, I was one of the weird people that grew up with a Mac. I started off with Mac 512K, and, you know, I always had Macworld magazine, and, you know, everything looked great in there, but, you know, I had this, like, crazy black and white Mac with like, text-based game, you know, like, there was a really limited selection of games for it, so, but I love the old magazine, so.
I was on an Apple II, and I used to get this magazine called Nibble, and what was their hook was in the magazine, they had these programs you could type into your computer, and you could get a game every month.
What?
As long as you were willing to type in, you know, pages and pages. It would take me the whole month until the next magazine came to get the game in. But there was a version of Beachhead in there that was really, really fun. Still one of my favorite. And the thing is, you can be like, I made this. Well, I didn't make this, but I put in the effort.
Yeah, Beachhead was a great game.
Actually, just earlier, we had a developer contact us and said, like, hey, you know, want to give out a code in December. So, you know, stay tuned. We're going to give out some codes in December.
Do you guys run sweepstakes that no one can possibly win? Because that's what I really miss about the Nintendo Power days. I'm actually a little bit serious. I would apply for a lot of those and just like, yeah, I'm going to get this awesome customized Game Boy and then nothing.
No, well, and actually something that we want to give to your listeners tonight is a free print subscription. So you guys format it however you want. Just, you know, contact us afterwards, figure out how you want to give it away to your listeners. And one lucky person will get a free year subscription to Retro Magazine.
Right anywhere on. In the world.
Thank you. Yep.
And for those who don't win, you'll still be lucky if you support this Kickstarter, I think. Wow, that sounded like way more of an ad than I wanted it to.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was totally going to transition that way more smoothly.
Well, yeah. You know, it's crazy. Like, we're still working out some bugs. Like, you know, we're homegrown business and we're, you know, doing the best we can and everything. And we just have weird stuff that happens sometimes where there's somebody in like Toronto and we print out of Boston or, you know, we're transitioning to another print plant. But somebody in like Auckland, New Zealand gets their magazine before somebody in Toronto. So it's just bizarre to us. We, you know, it's like somebody in Rio is posting a picture of their on Twitter like, oh, I got the new magazine. I love it. And like, somebody in Wisconsin's like, well, I still haven't got mine yet, you know, so.
Yeah, and then we get bombarded with emails, you know.
It's a growing process, you know. Yeah. We're working out some logistics for year two, and that's part of, you know, kind of starting a homegrown thing and growing. But, we'll have it worked out better for year two.
Does that work okay for the international customers? Because we stopped selling our DVDs internationally for a while after the post office jacked up the rates. Like, even going to Canada used to cost as much as just first-class mail within the U.S., and now it's like $9 minimum for just our DVD.
Yeah, I mean, the magazines, I mean, a polybag magazine is maybe, you wouldn't think it may be heavier, you know, than a DVD in a DVD case. So, I don't know. I mean, I think we get relatively decent rates.
I think there's some discount for print, right?
Well, I don't know, Mark.
There is, and there's all kinds of different tiers and stuff, and it's like really boring stuff. But we're in 30 countries. I mean, we're in like the Middle East, like Southeast Asia. You know, I mean, we're all over the planet. It's really amazing, the outreach. I mean, we had a guy on Kickstarter asking us through like semi-broken English. You know, like, I live in this like war-torn part of like the Middle East. Can I subscribe to you? And we're like, hell yeah, we'll send it. You know, like, we don't know how it gets there, but we have other guys in the Middle East and they get it and they love it. So we'll send it, you know, so.
So I'm on the Kickstarter page right now. I'm totally just going to back it at this early bird bit for as long as it's available, of course. But, I was wondering if this is the only way you can subscribe to the magazine right now is through the Kickstarter.
No, I mean you can always subscribe through our website, readretro.com. That's a website that we started, not too long after we launched the magazine, but it's kind of, taken a while to kind of get it to the point where it is now. We try to get it updated with daily content, at least during the week. We got a great team of writers, you know, starting to put up some really great material over there. And at the top of it, you'll notice a magazine tab. And if you're in the United States, you can use that to locate, you know, any retailers that might be near you that might be selling the magazine. Nice. But there's also, you know, the subscription options there. You can, you know, it gives you links to get it in iTunes and Amazon. You can get a digital PDF version that, you know, we send out, or you can get the print and digital version on there too. So that's open, you know, all the time, you know, all month long. And so the second year Kickstarter, which we launched basically the same time, I guess it was a little later than we launched. We launched it, I think, October 5th of 2013 last year, and I think we did it around the 15th or 13th or something this year. But we've committed to doing the second year already, so there was really no doubt that it was going to happen. But what we're using the Kickstarter for is to fund, you know, kind of improvements in the magazine, to add more pages to it, add, you know, custom kind of art pull-out inserts in different magazines as kind of surprise inserts, kind of like you get in an older magazine. Bring on more writers, more illustrators. You know, we'd love to get more illustrations in the magazine.
The cover I saw for the issue of Inquisition was just gorgeous.
That's issue 4. The yeah. Wario, amazing cover. Just yeah. an amazing cover.
And Orlando that did that, I mean, you know, I really go out and I try to find guys that are relevant. So I designed the whole thing cover to cover, basically. But I have a guest illustrator for the cover every time.
Yeah.
And we're really trying to celebrate guys that are in the game space or, you know, in the geek space, if you will, that are, like, you know, relevant. And this guy has won, like, so many awards. He's like Adobe's like top illustrator guru of the year, like 3 times in a row. Loves classic gaming. I mean, mind-boggling what this guy does in Illustrator. And we're just so humbled to have him on our cover. Like, same with Corey. Corey Schmitz did cover 3. He did like all the branding for Polygon, a lot of like concept wow. stuff for Last of Us for PlayStation, did a lot of PlayStation work. You know, Rob that did Mighty Number 9 cover, did a lot of GamePro stuff, or was it GameFan?
GameFan.
Yeah, like he has his own thing he does on Kickstarter. I mean, just incredible illustrator. So just keep an eye out. Like, every cover that we're going to put out, we really are going to have a great illustrator on there with some amazing art. You know, you won't see the same guy on there repeatedly. We just really want to celebrate like cool illustrators moving forward. So, you know, and we hope that it's something the fans will like.
It adds to the collectibility kind of the magazine.
Oh, definitely.
You know? If every cover, I mean, it'll be cool, like, you know, having 6 magazines with all these different colors, or a dozen, you know, after our, you know, 2-year run, having 12 different magazines with all these cool covers. You know, we're kind of known for the covers. I mean, even at when I talk to people that are getting the magazine, I mean, they'll, you know, they won't say what, you know, the second issue or the fourth issue. They'll go, that issue, you know, with Mighty Number 9 on it, or yeah. that issue, you know, that Hyperlight Drifter cover, you know, that you did, that magazine. Or so, yeah, people, I mean, it seemed to kind of remember that cover. And when they're talking about a particular magazine, they'll always start off by mentioning the cover first. So it's pretty important piece of the magazine.
Oh, so, yeah. So to that end, are these higher tiers also offering back issues for year 1?
We had 1 tier. I think we had a dozen of them. That was really kind of the only way to get issue 1 at this point. And I think sure. they've all sold out.
Or well, the, is there the, one left? the digital back issues. I'm seeing like it's like
Digital back issues.
Yeah,
there's digital back issues. Yeah,
people will always be able to get those. So we have those as part of the tiers, but generally those will be available, you know, from probably for a heck of a long time. So you can always get them that way.
Right on. Well, I definitely want to read Vink's article.
Well, actually, you can get that one physically still on Game Gavel, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We've got plenty of, right now, issue four. So if you go on Game Gavel, right on the homepage, you'll see Orlando's cover. It's kind of the, got Wario on there and Sonic and you know, a whole bunch of other things. So it sticks out kind of like a sore thumb on there. So, yeah, they're available on there, and you can pick one up, and we'll ship it right out to your house.
That's definitely one thing I missed about Nintendo Power was those clay-based covers and physical mock-ups and stuff that they would do. But these are like so much. This is like a whole other level. I love it.
You know, I just want to give a little plug for Nintendo Force magazine. If you're a fan of Nintendo products, they're sort of contemporary of ours. We've kind of done some promotion together with them because we believe in what they're doing. And, you know, we're not some jealous entity like, oh, well, screw them, let's put them under the rug or vice versa. And they're putting out a magazine right now. They're, you know, they did their year two Kickstarter. They put out a great product. You know, if you like getting stuff in the mail, definitely check them out, Nintendo Force.
They had a really nice Leyden cover on one of theirs that was that really stood out. Yeah, I subscribe to whatever remaining print magazines there are right now. I get Edge and Retro Gamer and Retro and Nintendo Force. And who else is even doing a game magazine these days?
Scroll.
Is Killscreen still around?
Yeah.
Really?
I really enjoyed their first couple.
I'm not sure what their frequency is, but yeah.
Yeah, once a year or something, yeah.
EGM's still around, you know, a little bit, but they seem to sort of be hit and miss, like coming out with no rate. It seems to me anyway, maybe I'm just, and I'm not in stores all the time looking for their magazine, but it seems like, you know, a lot of times I'll look in the grocery stores because, I mean, you know, I do kind of try to pay attention to who's out there, and I never see an EGM on the shelf. And then, you know, 2 or 3 months will go by, and then all of a sudden I'll see an EGM on the shelf. You know, the official Xbox magazine, the official, you know, Sony PlayStation magazine, although I think those are getting close to coming to an end. I think I've heard
the British Nintendo magazine just ended last month.
Oh wow! Yeah,
but you know the British magazines are great. I mean, Edge is a great magazine. I mean, I used to love Next Generation, and Edge kind of reminds me of kind of the you know Next Gen when it first came out. I mean, Next Generation to me was kind of the last great gaming magazine. And I'm not going to say ours isn't great. I mean, we just we haven't been around long enough. You know what I mean? So I don't want to say that. Although, I mean, I love it. I think it's a great magazine that we're putting out. But as far as you know, magazines that have come and gone, I mean, Next Gen was such a great magazine.
Yeah.
And to me, again, it was sort of the last magazine that just had you know, just kind of the soul of a great magazine. And you know, official, you know, Dreamcast magazine, I think was out maybe around that sometime. That was a great magazine.
Oh, I loved that. Yeah.
But it, you know, I think what they had maybe a year's worth or a year and a half's worth, and then they the system didn't last very long, I guess. So that was kind of maybe part of the reason the magazine didn't last long. But I mean, what a great magazine that was, you know.
Some of their best issues were actually after the Dreamcast was discontinued because they were just trying to fill people's subscriptions. So they were, you know, they had all these articles about the possibility of the Dreamcast becoming a add-on chip to DVD players or something. And they were, you know, they went crazy. Like they had this 3-page spread on how to modify Samba maracas to make little death head maracas. And, you know, they didn't have any new games coming out, so they were just trying to fill space. Yeah. And it was great. It was some
I'd
of the
love
funniest.
To read that.
Yeah. Yeah, if anybody has, I wonder if I bet on eBay you could get some of the later issues.
They're
so interesting, so interesting.
Remember too, those would always come with the demo discs, you know, with like a dozen, you know, Dreamcast demos on there, and that was really cool.
And near the end, again, they didn't have enough demos, so like one of the last discs had some like Maroon 5 music videos. I don't know.
What?
No, sorry, not Maroon 5. Sorry, Jurassic 5. And I was just like, they're hilarious. Just filling space now.
Let's put a rap group on there. That's good.
Yeah. Very, very interesting.
I think we'll definitely link the Kickstarter in our show notes.
Yes.
Should be a couple weeks left by the time this episode goes up. Probably also link Vink's back issue as well.
We started a really easy URL for that. So it's just readretro.com/Kickstarter. And that'll be easy.
Super easy.
So, yep.
Well, do you guys want to stick around for some future retro?
Absolutely.
We'll give it a shot.
All right.
Okay, so Sean, what do you got for future retro this week?
With the impending release of Dragon Age Inquisition, I'm finishing up one of my remaining playthroughs on Dragon Age Origins. It's a game that I tried to pick up about a year ago. I started thinking about it a lot. I was on Reddit a lot. I was also reading a lot of Song of Ice and Fire. So I think I was on book 5 by that point. I was just finishing it up. And I was like, you know, Dragon Age is a lot like Game of Thrones. I should go back to that. And had to put it down because I was moving. But then, you know, just picked it back up again. And, man, I love this game, but I just don't like playing through some of the stuff.
Is Dragon Origins the one that was like the black sheep of the family? I know there was one.
No, that's the original. That's the first one. So,
oh, really?
So the deal is that there were roughly 6 origins. There's like you're either like a human noble or there's like an elf slave, more or less, or you're the Dalish. So you're kind of roaming, trying to find your heritage, kind of thing. There's a lot of both European and North American allegory going on there. So the elves are kind of treated like Native Americans. And then you have, you know, the dwarves, and there's like a common class and the aristocracy. That's 5. You didn't quite get 6. Well, there's 6. The mage origin, regardless of your race, is a different origin too. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm playing as a mage. And I did all 6 origins once just to see how it worked. And after playing the game the first time, where it takes you through all these different areas and you interact with those different races and different social structures, going through the origins after that made me see, like, oh, you know, you start as a dwarf noble, and then it turns out that this whole thing about the succession in Orzammar ends up having a lot to do with one of the sons to the king being killed in the second going into exile, and you realize that, oh, if I play a dwarf noble, I am that son that's in exile. So that kind of thing happens a lot, and I don't want to play it a fourth time just to experience all the different changes, but they spent a lot of time thinking this out and writing things, and like you can kill some offhanded person, but then like they have a sword with a name on it, and there's a whole like journal entry about like the history of the sword. Like they really go into huge detail. So if you like Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin's endless descriptions of food, you'll love this game.
did you ever play the Dragon Age Legends like Flash Facebook game?
I did not, despite they tried very hard to get me to do it.
Just like
any good,
kind of like pile of shame, you know.
perfect.
It was almost weird, like, you know, like Lefty's brother's cousin, like he knows Flash, you know, action script. Let's have him make it. just really, you know, because it's like the main game is so high polished, and then it's like they put out this Facebook Flash thing. It was just bizarre. I don't know.
Yeah, this is one of those games too that was also released on PC, and like its roots as sort of being like a first place or a single player MMO. So I guess one of the M's is cut off there, but you can really very much tell if you play the PC version. I play on Xbox 360, so it's a bit of a different experience. But yeah, people really like to mod this game too, so I think it still has legs out in the community right now.
Very cool.
All right.
Cool. So what do you got this week, Vink?
Well, I was originally going to talk about Magic Knight Rayearth for the Sega Saturn, but I think I'm going to save that. Because I'm looking through my I'm broadcasting right now from my game room, and I've never talked about YY World.
Okay.
are you familiar with this one?
Not even a little. So I can't wait to hear about it.
Okay. It's actually the full title is Konami YY World, and basically what it is it's a crossover game. And at the time, it was all of Konami's like Famicom franchises. And it's really weird. You've got Konami Man, Konami Girl. They're two of the playable characters. You've got Goemon from Legend of the Mystical Ninja. you've got the two ships from Twin B and from Gradius. Yes, those are playable characters. You've got this ninja from what game was that? I don't even remember. You've got the main character from Castlevania, and this is my favorite one. You've got King Kong, not Donkey Kong, but King Kong.
Oh yeah, because they did
the
that.
Time, Konami had the rights to video games based on King Kong because they were doing King Kong 2.
I have two copies of King Kong 2 Megaton Punch or whatever.
Megaton Punch, yeah. It's a great game, and it's all in English. It's a wonderful game, but
that's crazy.
But they could never release it in the States because Konami didn't have the rights to King Kong in the States. So they planned to. That's why the game is entirely in English. But YY World is interesting because you've got all these different levels, and you get to choose the hero that you have going through. So like you can have, you know, you can do the standard thing and you can have a Castlevania character go to a Castlevania zombie fighting stage, or you can have King Kong fight vampires.
This is like what I wanted NES Remix to be.
Well, it's just absolutely great. And you don't unlock all the characters at the beginning. And some of the characters have the abilities to go where other people's can't. For example, King Kong can do that Megaton punch and knock down certain walls that the other characters can't. So you have to play through levels a number of times to figure out the secrets. And they made a sequel too. And it's just a fun, fun game. And unfortunately, because of copyrights, it's never going to be reprinted for one because of the different licenses. And probably it'll never appear on anything like Virtual Console for the same reason. So it's really sad and that not as many people have played this game. But the first one's not super expensive, maybe like $15 for a loose cart, and it's totally worth getting.
So this is a Famicom game then, I assume?
It's a Famicom game, yep. Yeah. They both are, YY World and YY World.
Is this spelled W-A-I?
Well, I mean, it's spelled in Japanese, but I guess you do, yeah. W-A-I-W-A-I World.
Oh, yeah.
Warudo. Yeah. I've been playing this one lately. It's hard. It's a hard game, but it's really fun.
Do either of you guys have anything you want to talk about?
Mark?
Well, I mean, if you're a fan of survival horror, okay. I've been playing Neverending Nightmare on the Ouya.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And
yeah. Give me a recommendation. This is a first.
Really creepy game. I mean, takes a long time to kind of get into, slow pace, not a lot of action. You know, if you're a fan of sort of like the text-based games, I mean, it's almost like a living text game. You know, like there's not much you do. It's slow movement. But it's kind of like a Maury Syndak, like Where the Wild Things Are illustrated, like
really?
Breathing game. Yeah, like totally creepy. Will spook the shit out of you, or you know, I don't know if you can swear, but
that's fine.
Yeah, like
we'll coin sound you. It's good.
Just you know, I think it's out on Steam now. Totally, like look at the illustrations. The guy that created it, like has mental problems and stuff, and like he created this game as a way of like, you know, like therapy? Dealing with his mental defunctions and stuff. I mean. It's just really bizarre and kind of gets in your head, like turn the lights off, play this game. It's black and white, like hand illustrations, just so creepy. I mean, this time of year, like really great game. I mean, totally underrated. There's a lot of good stuff on in the indie world for Ouya. You know, I think it's on Steam now. Totally check it out if you're looking for something creepy to play right now.
Wow, we totally should have had you on the last podcast. We were talking about horror games, and that one never came up. Sounds great.
Oh, man, right?
I'll tell you what, like creepy dolls, like spider webs, flickering flames, just like old house, graveyard, like teddy bear, like, you know, just very visceral.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice.
Mike, last chance.
Oh, you know, guys, I just don't play a lot of new stuff, but I would have to say that I think right now I'm all about Goat Simulator.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been hearing about this.
Have you guys seen this yet?
I've heard.
Or have you talked about this
I've
yet?
Seen the cosplay.
What?
Never.
Have you guys seen the game?
I've had it linked a couple times, but I haven't played it, no.
It's just a hysterical, like, open world. You know, I heard about this game a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, I just got to check this thing out. And, you know, you can get it, you know, on iTunes, although it's not quite as good as the PC version. But, I mean, you know, you're just a goat, you know, running through the world and causing havoc. And, I mean, it's just friggin' hilarious. You know, the different situations, you know, you can get your goat in and you can, you know, take on cars, you know, with your goat and, you know, wreck, you know, parties that, you know, people are grilling out in the back of the yard. You just go and just destroy the grill. I mean, there's so many weird things you can do. It is really hilarious. And I don't know. Mark, have you seen this?
No. I've heard about it, but I haven't checked it out.
It's hysterical. And I was going to ask if any of you guys played Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, that's another that one came up in our last podcast. I hear that one is incredibly scary.
Yeah, I was just curious. You know, that's one I haven't got yet, but I've heard a lot of great things about it.
Yeah, me too. It's on my pile of shame. So
I have it on the iPad. Good game.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know how much replay value I'd give it, but definitely worth checking out.
All right, I think that's a good time now to go into our pile of shame.
Pile of shame. Okay. My one is, again, I'm going to go back to the 8-bit days, and my pile of shame is Rainbow Islands. Does anybody know this one?
It's Bubble Bobble, isn't it?
It was called Rainbow Islands, The Story of Bubble Bobble 2. Bubble Bobble is
Get the heck
like,
out of here.
Yeah. No,
you're confusing me, because isn't there a Bubble Bobble 2?
There is a Bubble Bobble too, but
what?
But that one came much later than Rainbow Islands, the story of Bubble Bobble.
Okay, continue.
Okay, well, I'm a huge Bubble Bobble fan. Actually, Mike, you know this because I bought Bubble Bobble from you.
Yes, yeah, I picked it up for the TurboGrafx. You know, I haven't played it yet either, so I will join you in the pile of shame with this one.
Oh. Have you played Lost Levels yet?
Lost Levels? Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was having this exact same thought. Like, you know, if there are two Mario 2s, why can't it be good enough for Bubble Bobble?
But I remember when this came out, I was so excited because, like, oh, wow, Bubble Bobble 2, even though the cover art was this kid and a bunch of rainbows. But I picked it up, and I'm just like, this is not Bubble Bobble 2. I was so disappointed, and my disappointment has continued on that I haven't really played. I mean, since that rental, I haven't really played it, but I've been hearing, especially from people in the TurboGrafx community, that it's a really good game. It's like a really good game, but I just can't get over my disappointment that it didn't have the you know, dinosaurs in it.
Wait, so what are the main characters then?
Okay, the main characters are Bubloon and Bobloon.
Okay.
But they're in their human forms. As Bubby and Bobby.
Oh yeah, so like My Little Pony.
They're not the Bubble. It is the My. Oh my gosh, it is. this is Bubble Bobble Equestria Tales.
You know, Hello Kitty isn't actually a cat.
You take that back. But anyway, it's a platformer. Actually, you cast these rainbows, and they have to follow in rainbow shapes to like capture enemies in the rainbows. It's a platformer. It's similar to a PCFX game called Chipchon Kick. Nobody knows what that is. Never mind.
Oh god, you're just hurting my brain right now. Yeah.
I don't know. I think if it would have just been called Rainbow Islands, I would have been fine with it, because it looks like it's a pretty good game. But that they had to tack on that it's Bubble Bobble 2 really kind of got my goat to pull back to Goat Simulator.
I cannot help you with this one. I'm sorry. There is nothing I can say to make you want to pick this up.
And then it had a
sequel. And I have to admit, yeah, Parasol Star is the one I was thinking of.
Yep.
That's the one I've got for the TurboGrafx. Yeah.
So that would technically be Parasol Star is the story of Bubble Bobble 3.
No! Stop.
They actually call it The Story of Rainbow Islands 2 is what they
Good
say.
Lord!
There's turtles all the way down. Oh, God.
Taito, I want you to listen to me now.
I know you're listening, Taito.
Oh, but it's a lost cause. I was going to say you need to make your titles more clear, but you know who bought Taito, right? Square Enix.
We're done.
And Square Enix has even worse subtitles for their games.
I had a pile of shame, but just forget it. We're just done.
So I don't know. I'm gonna play this though. I've got a copy. I've got a copy for the Famicom, and I've got the sequel for PC Engine. And I've even got the sequel to that, Bubble Symphony, for Sega Saturn. No, I'm not just making these up. Okay.
Now, which Bubble Bobble lineage is that? Are we to 4 yet or
well,
5?
Well, I suppose you could call it the story of Bubble Bobble 4, or
no.
You could call it the actual Bubble Bobble 3. Or the prequel. Or
the prequel. I was waiting for the prequel, that's right.
The prequel to Bubble Memories.
The prequel to Bubble Bobble.
Is there like a timeline for Bubble Bobble, kind of like the Link, like alternate?
You guys need to do this and put it in the show.
Yeah,
all right.
I need
set the record straight, guys.
This is really
come on.
This is your next pullout poster from Retro Magazine that people can have this chart tracing the lineage of Bubble Bobble and Busta.
Yeah, I think we have to do this.
We should get one of our artist friends to actually draw it up for us.
But you know, they'll be like that guy on the internet that disagrees, like, well, you're looking at it from the viewpoint of like Bubble Bobble 2 Rainbow Island is really the sequel to this, but you know, in an alternate timeline, something or other.
Before Bub had the bubble magic of there, and it's not to say that during the timeline they couldn't have reverted back to dinosaur form. Yeah, I can see
read my fanfic
already.
Again?
Yeah, my head's gonna explode. I love it.
All right, Sean, we'll get on that.
I can't top this.
Okay, what's your pile of shame?
Well, I picked up Bayonetta 2.
Great,
but I haven't opened it.
Why?
It's supposed to be good. I've heard it's good.
Well, this is my problem. I played the demo. I did enjoy it, but I got all these games coming. Like, you know, I mentioned Dragon Age Inquisition. That's going to be here very soon. I pre-ordered Smash Brothers for Wii U with the, you know, the controller. So I'm going to have a full quiver of 8.
Okay.
And so I can use all my, well, I guess with my hands and my feet, I still can't play as well myself. But I got those games and I,
then you should be playing this right now so you can get it done before Smash comes out.
I don't have that kind of time. And, I want to have Bayonetta, but I can't justify buying and playing it right now. So I think I'm just going to send this copy to you instead.
Oh, well, I mean, that is a good alternative. I approve of that, but, I don't know. Did you didn't play the first one, did you?
I did not, and I played it at PAX East, the first PAX East, at a kiosk there, and I did like it, but I never did pick it up after that for reasons I really can't explain. Maybe you can be nice to me and let me open it up first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Just don't use my Club Nintendo card.
No, I'm pretty sure I want this game. I just want to really, really make sure because it's just, you know, the holidays, I just can't. So many games.
Yeah, totally.
I don't like paying
before you send it.
Okay. I just don't like paying full price for games so close together. It's just freaking me out. All right. I did like the demo, though. It was just like insane carnage, like right from the get-go. And some reviews I read indicate that is really just the first level, and it gets crazier from there.
Yep. How about either of you guys, Mike, Mark, anything that you've been meaning to get around to playing, you just haven't got into it?
Go back to Konami. I've had Lords of Shadow 2, Castlevania. And I actually really liked the first one. And started playing the second one, and it's just, you know, like there's modern day stuff in it. And I can't really get into it.
Yeah, just because of the style, or
it just seems like it's just gone a completely different direction, and you kind of jump between, you know, medieval Castlevania timeline and modern day warehouse with lasers and robots. and just, you know, like overused phrase, like jump the shark kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it just too bad. Takes me out of it. And like, I really love the series in general. I like what they did with the first Lords of Shadow, and this one is just, it's just really bizarre. I don't know. I've maybe put 6 hours into it, and just it's been a labor the whole time. So I don't know. I keep staring at it on the shelf and seem to play other stuff. So, you know, maybe one day I'll work my way through it.
If only Konami still had that King Kong license and they could have put him in there.
There you go. God. That would, I mean, it would be so refreshing. All of a sudden, like, stage three, King Kong comes ripping through the wall and he's like, oh yeah.
Like Kool-Aid Man style? Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
So Mike, you said you had two?
I've got two. I mean, you know, back when I used to have time playing video games, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics was a game that I really liked, although I never finished it. And so I've been asking people, like, you know, what are some newer games similar to that style? So somebody had told me Disgaea. And so I've picked up Disgaea, Hour of Darkness, and Cursed Memories, you know, Disgaea 2 for the PS2. And these have been sitting literally on top of my PS2, next to my television for over a year. I mean,
it's under a layer of
balancing
dust
on top.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know if you guys have played it, if it's worth, you know, cracking these things open and kind of acquainting myself with this series or not. But I've heard that they're good if you like, you know, those types of games. And it's been a long time since I've sat down and really put a lot of time into games like that. So they're both just sitting there looking like a lot of time, you know, is going to be involved if I crack them open. And I've yet to do it.
They're huge games. They're like 80 to 100 hours.
You're not helping.
All right. Yes, you're not helping.
If you don't do the side missions.
The gameplay is really, really the gameplay is really good, but I mean, you got to kind of like the style, though. It's very like Japanese, like goth witches type thing. There's a lot of humor in them, which is good. Kind of reminds me back of like the Working Designs days.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're huge games, and that's one of the reasons fans like them so much, is there's so much to them. But at the same time, if you don't, I would recommend playing it for a couple of hours and see if you like the style.
Yeah.
Because if you don't really like the style, it's not worth putting that much time into.
Right. Well, I mean, I've you know, looked at the videos and stuff and just kind of tried to learn more about it before because there's been times where I've been close to cracking it open, then, you know, the phone will ring and then then I'm off. And, you know, it doesn't take much to distract me these days. So, I'm just trying to decide, you know, if it's worth, you know, putting the time into these. That's what I've heard, you know, they're going to be super long. And
feeling the same way about Fire Emblem. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Have you guys checked out Pure Solar yet?
I played the demo that they released a while back. But I really want to get the physical card. I really do.
I just started playing that, and kind of like what you said, like, oh, the game's huge. This guy, you know, goes on 80 hours. Like, I started playing it, and I played maybe, you know, 2 hours of it, and I thought I beat it. And then it's like the intro starts rolling. You're like, oh, my God. You know, like, just scratch the surface of this thing. And I really want to get into it. I think it's really well made. It's just like I'm looking at it like, do I have the time, you know? Really cool game. So,
which version are you playing? Because anyone not familiar with this, it's very strange the platforms it's available for, which is like Wii U, Dreamcast, Mega Drive.
What?
Yeah, see, Sean.
Well, yeah. I actually have two copies.
Genesis. Yeah. It was on Genesis.
Yes.
Yeah, I have the HD version on my PS4, and I have I was one of the lucky people that jumped in on the Ouya and got like the year unlimited download play anything for $60 that was like sold out in 12 hours. So I have a version on my Ouya too. So, but I'm playing on PS4, which is weird. But yeah, I mean, really cool. You know, if you like Final Fantasy, check it out. Like old school Final Fantasy.
But yeah, some people made a brand new Japanese style RPG for the Genesis. and they made actual carts. And I think there was a cart plus CD version, actually, that had, like, CD quality music as well.
Yeah.
But that's crazy in itself that they made this. And then they decided to port it to everything else that hasn't had a game in a while, like the Dreamcast and, here's the punchline, the Wii U.
Seriously, like, the first 5 minutes playing the game, like, it made me smile. And there hasn't been something that's done that in a long time. Just like, man, you know, like, this takes me back to, like, 1992 or something. It's really well done.
Yeah, I've heard. But that's another really long game, yeah. It's the largest Genesis cartridge ever made, too. It's like 64 mega, I think.
Megabytes or megabits?
Megabits. But the biggest retail one was 32, so.
All right. Yeah, it's coming out on Wii U, and it looks like it's out on Steam, so.
Oh, okay.
You know, you could probably play it on your toaster soon or something.
Yeah, probably.
You know.
Bring it down to the 2600. Oh, my. I love it when people try to release modern games for the 2600. Has anyone played Atari 2600 Halo?
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We did an interview with Ed Freeze, Ed Freeze, issue two, I think.
Yeah, that's just crazy stuff. We've got a friend named Joe Grisoff, who's an independent filmmaker, and he's releasing two Atari 2600 carts this year based on his movies.
Oh, very cool.
We should interview him.
Dead of Night.
Have him get in touch with us too. I'd love to learn more about that.
Yeah. Dead of Night, mean? And the other one is
Laughing
is
Boy?
No, I think it was.
I think it might be Laughing Boy.
Conjoined?
No.
Well, I'll have to look. But he sent me the Dead of Night one. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
But I just love it when people are releasing games for these classic systems. I love that.
All right. Well, Mike Kennedy, Mark Kaminsky, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thanks for having us on. We really appreciate it.
And do you have any closing thoughts or comments?
No. Just thanks to you guys, and we ask for everybody's support. You know, it's a labor of love at this point. So, you know, anything people can do to help spread the word, if they believe in what we're doing and they like what we're doing, just give us your support and consider yourself thanked.
All right.
Yeah, so make sure to check out their Kickstarter. We'll link that in the show notes as well. And check out Game Gabble too, because you've dealt with that before, Vink, right?
Oh, Vink, yeah.
A lot of stuff over there.
Yeah, I got about 400 items on Game Gabble right now, actually, if you want to get some Japanese games. And just check out what they have.
Yeah, Vic, I tell so many people about you. I mean, there's a lot of people collecting import games now, because a lot of times you can find, you know, the import equivalent of the U.S. games for, like, you know, a lot less expensive if you can figure out a way to play them, right?
And
you, I don't know how you do it, but I mean, Vink's shipping guys, if you're looking for import games and you're in the States, I mean, he's got tons of them on there, and he just basically ships them for almost free from Japan. I don't know how he does it, but it's like the same price you'd pay in the U.S., I think, almost, right?
Yep. Most games are shipped for about $5, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't Chris Kohler do an article about Chrono Trigger, how it's really expensive for SNES?
Yeah, and I sell it on GameGavel. I sell it on GameGavel for like I think $4.
Yeah, but it's all in Japanese. You know?
Yeah, but it's in Japanese. Yeah.
Oh, is it? I didn't know if that was the one that had English or not, but.
But interesting enough, what a lot of people have said that they're doing is they're buying some of my carts and they're playing them on Retron 5s because you can patch in the English.
What? Oh, that's a whole other story.
Retron.
I think it would be great to write an article, Mark, and with Vink on here too. I mean, there's so many people that like on the Sega Saturn, right? There's it gets a bad rap in the States, but you know, overseas it was just a tremendous unit. You know, partly because they had tons of games over there that we never got over here, right? Yeah. All the shmups, and it was just a great system. So I think an article on how to play, you know, what's the easiest and best way to play, you know, import games on U.S. systems would be a really interesting article. Maybe a lot of people know this stuff, but I don't, you know, and I consider myself relatively in the know for most things, and I've just not had the time to go dig around the internet and, you know, find all this information. I mean, you know, I think it would be an interesting article to write, you know, and then maybe talk about some of these games that, that really, you know, need to be played over here. And here's how you can play them, kind of thing. I think would be a really
It's actually way too much information for just one article, but maybe just a system each time or something.
Yeah, I think it would be fascinating. I think a lot of people would like to know that information.
Yeah, you know, I think it's always really intimidating for people to say, like, well, how do I go about importing stuff and checking it? You know, and I think there's a big audience for it, but it's just like very intimidating. People don't know it's relatively accessible to them, easy to do. So
it's actually really easy, and you know, there's a lot of games that you wouldn't realize it, but actually have English built into them. For example, the PC Engine Ninja Gaiden never came out. Sorry, Gaiden. Oh, I can't. I always mispronounce it every time. never came out for in the U.S. because of licensing. But they must have originally thought they were going to, because they left the English on the cart. There's a code you can put in, and it's fully in English, and it's a wonderful, wonderful version of the game, for example.
Not importable without a converter, though, which I'm sure, you know, challenge accepted.
Well, yeah. Indeed.
Well, thank you guys again, Mike and Mark. Next week, we already recorded it. We sort of alluded to it before, but we discuss why I haven't gotten a PS4 yet.
It should be interesting.
Hey, spoilers, I already bought it.
Thanks for ruining the podcast.
Oh, gosh. All right, just pretend I didn't say that. I guess that's all the time we have for this week. Until next time, the dojo is
hoping that you'll log on to Kickstarter and click on and subscribe to Retro Magazine Year 2 Kickstarter.
All right. Sweet. That's good.
Good. Rockin' playing game. Whoa,
yay! Whoa! Famicom Dojo.
If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our show notes at FamicomDojo.tv and leave a comment. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or our RSS feed. Rate and leave a comment on our free iTunes storefront, or call us at 608-492-1923 to share your thoughts. Follow Famicom Dojo on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to train your game. And visit littlepodcast.com to sponsor an episode, sign up for a free Audible trial, or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.